This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Did you have a cup of coffee this morning? Americans drink millions of cups per day, billions each year. So no doubt about it, Java, Go Juice, whatever your favorite name is for it, coffee is extremely popular in the U.S. and around the world. Joining me this afternoon is Robert Thurston. He's one of the editors of the book Coffee, a comprehensive guide to the bean, the beverage, and the industry. He's also in the Department of History at Miami University and owner of the Oxford Coffee Company. And you can join our conversation by calling 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And just out of curiosity myself, what would be your favorite cup of coffee? And Bob, good to see you today. Oh, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
When was coffee first cultivated, and when was it first consumed? It goes back a long way, doesn't it?
It goes back a long way, but the origins of all that are really legendary. There's a story about a goat herd in Ethiopia, Kaldi, who found his goats especially frisky one day, and he thought they'd been poisoned by eating something. This is all legend, mind you. And he followed the goats, and they were eating red fruit from a small tree or bush. And he thought he would try it on himself, and he got a buzz from it. And but this is all legend. We don't know. We know that the first coffee houses were about 1550 in what's today Syria. That's about what we know for sure.
So consumed about 500 years ago or more, and roughly?
Roughly, yeah. And the first coffee houses in Europe were that we actually can document were in Britain about 1660 in England.
When those coffee shops first opened, what was the reaction to them? Did people greet them with open arms, or were they kind of skeptical and said, "What is this? This is terrible"?
They were greeted pretty well at first, I think, because coffee, of course, presented an alternative to going and drinking alcohol all the time. So coffee houses pretty quickly became meeting places, places for discussion. There's even the idea that the first real political parties grew out of coffee houses in England. So they seemed to be pretty popular right away. And a number of English travelers had been to Turkey and so on and tried coffee before 1660, brought it back to England, and so it kind of became in vogue, very popular with the elite, even before the coffee houses opened.
When did the first advertising for coffee come about?
It's right in that period. I don't have the date off the top of my head, but it's really 1660s. Broadsides, sheets of paper printed, posted on walls and poles and things like that for coffee houses in London and Oxford, England.
What led you to edit this book? What got you interested in doing this? You're in the coffee business yourself, so that had to be part of it. But what got you into this?
Well, I started out as a historian of Russia and the Soviet Union a long time ago. And not to be flippant about it, but I spent two winters in Moscow, and I just decided that I wanted to go to warmer places for research. And coffee always grows, you know, between the tropics of Capricorn and Cancer around the center of the earth. The good quality coffee, Arabica, has to have some elevation. So when you go to coffee farms, you are in a gorgeous climate and usually up in the mountains. You can't beat it for temperature and beauty. So that was one of the reasons. But I also wanted to do something that would allow me to draw on my historical background, the things I've written about, my general interest and love of history, but that I could also bring right up to the present and relate to what's going on today. And then I like to do things with my hands, so I thought, well, why not actually open a coffee business too?
So. Coffee, you say, is grown in warmer regions. So does the U.S. import most of its coffee? Do we have any areas of the country where we're growing a lot of coffee?
We actually have three areas where we grow coffee now. We don't grow a lot of coffee, but Puerto Rico, Hawaii, several islands in the Hawaiian Islands chain, and actually there's one farm that started very recently near Santa Barbara, California, where the conditions are just right. It never freezes. It never gets too hot there. That's the only one on the continental United States. So we import the vast majority of the coffee that we use here.
How much? I know the figures were, I think we consume, what is it, 400 million cups is what I heard a day of coffee. And something like over the course of a year, it translates out into more than 100 billion cups.
That sounds right. The biggest seller of cups of coffee around the world is actually Dunkin' Donuts. Now, you would think Starbucks and so on. Actually,
right.
Dunkin' Donuts in terms of regular cups of coffee, and they sell something like 170 billion cups a year around the world. So it's really huge.
That is amazing. How big an industry has this become in the U.S.? I mean, we're importing a lot of it. We're drinking a lot of it, obviously, and we've got retailers all over the place selling coffee. So
yeah, there are now more than 25,000 coffee shops that sell what we call specialty coffee, and then endless, of course, drive-in gas stations and that type of thing. And that's up a great deal from 1970, 1980. There were maybe 2,000 coffee shops selling high-quality coffee. Now, out of that 25,000, more than 11,000 are Starbucks. But we don't hold that against them.
No, but what you're saying is true. We certainly see a lot of coffee shops, specialty coffee shops around the country. And
yeah.
I know just in my little neighborhood, I actually have a Starbucks that sits up on the corner, and I've got two independently owned coffee shops
right. That
sit in my neighborhood. And it's not a huge neighborhood, so I'm kind of surprised yeah. That we have that many coffee shops.
Yeah, well, they really are almost everywhere now. And in fact, I've seen maps of places in the country that are more than 100 miles from a Starbucks. And it's very hard to find any place in the U.S. now that's not within 100 miles of a Starbucks. And then, of course, all the local independents that you're talking about. Sure.
Quite a few. Does the rest of the world share our enthusiasm for coffee?
This enthusiasm is growing a lot. For example, South Korea, just in the last few years, has exploded with coffee shops. There are many, many more coffee shops in Brazil than ever before, and internal consumption in Brazil is a huge thing. Brazil's the largest coffee producer, but now they're also starting to drink a lot of their own coffee at home. So we go to Sao Paulo, and you see new coffee shops, for example, all over. Kenya, China is a massive market already and will be much bigger.
513-419-7100. Tell us what your favorite cup of coffee might be. You can also email us at talk@wvxu.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. So the global trade in coffee is definitely expanding, definitely growing.
Yes, there are serious problems, though, because there is more coffee produced every year than people drink around the world. And there's a fair amount of overproduction now, especially in sort of the middle range and low range of coffee quality. So that has driven the price of coffee in general down a lot. And we're once again, there are always cycles. There have always been cycles of high prices, low prices, and so on. And right now we're in one of those down cycles. So farmers are often, once again, not making enough money to continue to grow coffee. So we will see a lot of the less able or less fortunate farmers drop out of the business in the next few years, and then the price will go back up again. We'll be on this roller coaster forever, I think.
What's the expression? Where does the issue of, I think it's called fair trade, is it?
Fair trade.
Where does that come into play?
Yeah, fair trade is a certification scheme or program that writes contracts to guarantee a minimum price per pound of coffee. And so the fair trade system ensures that the farmers will make at least adequate money to keep going. Fair trade is only one of a number of certification schemes that try to help the farmers. There's, for example, Rainforest Alliance, which concentrates on the quality of the environment for farmers. And you can have double certification. You could have fair trade or organic as another certification program that the coffee has been raised without artificial chemicals. So there, and fair trade is the best known of all these programs that try to directly benefit the farmer. There's a lot of criticism of fair trade. We can go into that if anybody wants to call about it. But
and the number is 513-419-7100. And Bob, while you were editing the book, did you come across anything that really surprised you?
Well, what has not constantly surprised me about the coffee industry, but has always impressed me a lot, is that coffee people in the consuming countries, in the wealthier countries of the world, always seem to care a lot about the quality of life for the farmers in the producing countries. There are so many programs. Just one example, there's a program run out of Vermont to test women among coffee growers for pre-cervical cancer conditions. For 25 cents, a woman can be tested, and if she has this pre-cervical cancer condition, she could be treated on the spot. So over and over again, you find this kind of program. How can we help the farmers? How can we get more money to them, clean water to them, better protective clothing, that kind of thing? So it hasn't been a big surprise necessarily, but it's been one of the most pleasant aspects of dealing with coffee.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And coffee seems to have a language all its own. I've always been curious where the expression cup of joe came from.
That expression supposedly, now a lot of this again is legendary, supposedly came from World War II, when the average American GI was always called Joe. European kids would run after American soldiers and say, "Joe, got gum," and things like that. So what Joe drank became the cup of Joe.
And what about the word Java itself?
Java is in Indonesia, an island in Indonesia, and that's where in the late 1600s the Dutch began to grow coffee. They made the East Indies a colony. And the Dutch began to export coffee quickly, and so it became, along with mocha, you'll hear that word too a lot, that's a port in Yemen. So mocha and Java became known as the two ports from which coffee came, and then the names of those ports were just transferred to the coffee itself.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's talk with Ray in Kennedy Heights. Good afternoon, Ray. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
My question is, where does McDonald's, with their huge chain, and it looks like they're going after the coffee market, and they're my favorite. I try a lot of Starbucks and always find it to be bitter, too strong, et cetera, et cetera. McDonald's has my vote as the for cost, quality, consistency, and particularly the cost factor. Just how many cups do they serve a day?
I can't tell you how many cups they serve a day, but they are hot on the trail of Starbucks, and a number of things I've seen lately show that McCafe, which is not only in the U.S. but all over Europe now, does outsell Starbucks by the revenue side. And McCafe is growing very rapidly in France, for example. I was just there a few weeks ago. And you're not alone in thinking, by the way, that McCafe coffee tastes better than Starbucks. I don't want to knock anybody's coffee at all, but I've seen a number of surveys lately in which people say that. Yes, I prefer McCafe coffee. So, yeah, McDonald's is coming on like gangbusters, but watch out especially for Dunkin' Donuts, which has been mostly in the eastern part of the country but has vast plans for expansion across the U.S. and across the world.
Ray, thank you very much. Great question. And personally, I'm a White Castle kind of guy. I like White Castle coffee. I will admit to that.
Okay.
Bill from Camp Denison, good afternoon, Bill. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. And this is a great, great topic. I'm enjoying it very much.
Great.
And I agree also with White Castle coffee and McDonald's.
Two for White Castle.
And I agree with the previous caller that the big chains out of Seattle, it's a little bitter for me. But I remember when I was early in hospitality industry in my 20s, some 45 years ago, a cup of pot of coffee would be brewed and it would sit on the burner until it was done. You know, it might be all afternoon,
yeah.
And somebody would take a sip of it, and I would, as I was in the food service industry, and I would spit it out and think, what the heck is coffee all about?
Yeah.
This is horrible.
Yeah.
And so I go to teas for a while. But then coffee evolved, as we all know, and today you can get tremendous tasting coffee. I prefer independent coffee shops where we have close where I live in Madeira, is close to Madeira. Of course, we have the national chain, and then there's the independent place that a lot of people prefer. I like it black. I tried too many years with partners who would say cream or sugar or this and that and the other thing. But once I started drinking it black, I became quite, I don't want to say addicted, but taken with it. I got a cup in my car right now as I'm driving.
Okay.
Thank you. I've enjoyed and enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Bill.
Don't forget to title the book again before you go off the air.
We will definitely get it. It's Coffee, A Comprehensive Guide to the Bean, the Beverage, and the Industry. And we will mention it again before we go off the air. But
I appreciate that. I'll write it down.
Thanks much, Bill. We appreciate it.
If I could mention one thing, Mark, in response to that comment. If you go back to the very early days of coffee in England, the way they made it was to grind up coffee beans, which were already very old, and dump them in a big iron cauldron and swing that over an open fire and let that bubble and boil all day. That's why people started to drink coffee with milk and sugar, because otherwise you couldn't even get it down, I don't think. But we have evolved, and now there's so much more interest in drinking coffee straight or black and exploring the many, many subtle tastes and wonderful tastes that you can get out of coffee that's properly roasted and prepared.
And that's interesting that you say that, because I think one of the appeals of coffee is that it is an individualistic thing. It's your individual taste. Yeah. Different people. Some people love Starbucks. Some people like White Castle. Some people like McDonald's.
Yeah.
Some people like it with cream. So there are a lot of different variations to coffee, and that's one of the neat things about it.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many now variations on lattes, cappuccinos, macchiatos. I mean, we get all these Italian terms, but they mean something for the most part.
Well, let's talk with Richard from Westchester. Good afternoon, Richard.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. Very interesting topic. And like your last caller, I'm someone who has always enjoyed his coffee black and started drinking when I was in college and, of course, drank coffee in the Army, which was quite an experience. And the closest I think I have ever come to having the original type of Turkish coffee was on a visit to Budapest, Hungary. And there, being someone who drinks their coffee black, it came across with a real strong burnt flavor. And of course, I've had Starbucks, which is really strong. But in my mature years, I seem to have settled on French roast. Now, I don't really care who manufactures it. Most French roasts are pretty good. And as long as they make it fairly strong, I find French roast to be the most flavorful coffee these days, and I would appreciate your comment on how that stands in the average coffee drinker these days.
Richard, thank you for your question. And my French roast is in my top five. I like that a lot. So
French roast means a dark roast to the extent that you see oil on the surface of the beans themselves. You can even, in theory, have darker roasts, but what happens, by the way, chemically and physically, when you get the coffee to that point, you're taking it past the caramelization of the beans into carbonization. So the beans actually start to burn a little bit, and that produces a certain flavor. So the caller didn't say, by the way, I prefer Kenyan French roast or Ethiopian French roast, because typically when you take any coffee bean that dark, it's going to taste pretty much the same. And I'm not arguing with your taste at all. If that is what you like, great. And we serve a lot of dark roast coffee. We don't call it French roast. We just call it dark roast. And I know people like that. The only thing I would say is maybe people will move away at some point, or at least experiment with lighter roasts, because when you get French roast coffee, what you tend to get is the taste of the roast, and it overrides inherent tastes in the beans themselves. So maybe just for fun someday, try lighter roasts and explore what sort of fruit notes, floral notes, citrus notes, chocolatey, nutty notes, that type of thing that you get with lighter roasts, just for the heck of it.
Tim from Westside. Tim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a question about espresso. How come when you make espresso from a home machine, it doesn't taste as good as the espresso you get in a cafe?
Yeah, that's because the home machines produce espresso at a much higher level of pressure, about 15 bars, 15 atmospheres, whereas in a shop with a large commercial espresso machine, you actually need less pressure, 9 bars. So you can make excellent espresso with some home machines, but you're going to have to pay a lot, like at least $600, $700 and up for a decent home espresso machine. And then you're going to have a grinder at home, which I highly recommend anyway. And you're going to have to experiment with the grind. And still, it's going to be a little bit unpredictable. That's been my experience for a long time. So, but basically what happens in a good shop, I hope it happens in my shop all the time, is that the baristas do what's called dial in the espresso. That is, they figure out each morning or several times during the day what the grind should be, and they change the grind very slightly, and how much coffee should be put in what's called the portafilter, which hooks into the machine, and how strongly the ground coffee should be tamped with a special tool pressed into that portafilter. So if you do all those things right and you have a good coffee machine, you're going to hit that sweet spot most of the time. And that's very difficult to do with most home machines.
Tim, thank you very much for your question. Time for one more phone call, about a minute left here. Let's talk with Bill from Cincinnati. Good afternoon, Bill.
Hi, good afternoon. Just a quick question. It sort of relates to some of the other questions that were out there, but I find that there's a pretty good relationship between the amount of time that goes between the roasting and you drinking the coffee. So I buy all my coffee kind of small batch, and I just wondered, with this excess of coffee that the guest was talking about, is there a relationship between the beans when they're picked and the beans when you get them, as far as is there a shelf life to those?
Yes, definitely. The coffee harvests vary around the world according to whether a country is north or south of the equator, for example. And so ideally, you would use coffee within 3 or 4 months after it has been harvested. The green coffee would come to a roaster within that span of time, and then the roaster would roast it, hopefully properly or well, and then you would consume it within, again, ideally a week or so after getting it. That's the best.
Bill, thank you for your question, and thanks for joining me this afternoon,
Bob.
Oh,
thank you very much.
Robert Thurston is one of the editors of the book, Coffee, A Comprehensive Guide to the Bean, the Beverage, and the Industry.